Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome back to the Dog Pod, the original podcast covering the undefeated, fifth-ranked, Pac-12 leading Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm with Law Dog Mitch on unpaid leave. Hey, I think last week everybody was maybe still hung over a little bit from the Dogs' 34-31 win over Oregon, and the team may have been too. We'll talk about it. They overcome four turnovers, a 15-minute differential in time possession, zero offensive TDs, and eke out an ugly 15-7 win over the Arizona State Sun Devils. And I think we were probably all glad that no one was watching that game. We're going to get into it, and hopefully, like the rest of the team, we're going to flush that down the old Price Pfister and move on to the match against the mighty men of Stanford.
Well, the other thing you want to flush down the toilet, BT, are your picks from last weekend. So we'll save that one for the end.
Oh, look who's got opinions! Look who's got opinions! I think I was getting a little footloose and fancy with my lead, and may have also flushed that down the toilet. So,
you're clinging to it, but barely. All right. This one started inauspiciously enough, right? Grady Gross slipping on the wet turf. The rain started to trickle down to start this one. But the Huskies got a lucky bounce into ASU territory. The Devils actually started at the 24. But this would kind of be a theme on this night, though. ASU converting a third and short and then eventually giving it back to UW after their punt to start the game. Penix, though, definitely didn't have his best stuff in this one. His second pass of the game intercepted at the UW 45-yard line. But ASU not converting on this early turnover and ends up missing a field goal from 31 yards. File that one away. Huskies do get it back and punt. This time after just four plays, ASU picks up a few first downs, but they get stuck in a 4th and 3 from the Husky 40-yard line. This will be another theme of the night. Huskies get the stop, turn it over on downs. Penix goes 5 for 5, leads the Huskies down to the 7-yard line, but an ASU lineman gets a hand up, tips his pass to a wide-open Roma Dunze in the end zone, and it falls into an ASU defender's hand for the second interception of the game. It's still 0-0 early in the second. Huskies get it back after another ASU punt, but the follies continue. Huge incomplete in the end zone with heavy contact on Jalen Polk on first down near the goal line, immediately followed by a botched exchange that gives the Devils the ball back at the ASU 47. They finally take advantage of these turnovers with a Cameron Scadabo touchdown, making it 7-0 ASU. Just over 4 minutes left in the half. Three turnovers, but just 7 points for ASU. File that one away, too. It's frustrating, but the Huskies drive the ball down here to end the first half, but then they end up in 4th and 6 from the ASU 7, and they opt to go for a Grady Gross field goal. They make it 7-3. At the time, it kind of felt like, hey, you need to put some points on the board. Like, this is all right. But in all, 5 possessions in that first half, 3 turnovers, a punt, and a very unsatisfying field goal. It was a tough start to this one. Then almost on cue, the second play of the second half, completion to Jalen Polk, who then coughs it up for the Huskies' 4th and fortunately their final turnover of the game. This is where the Husky defense, though, really picked up their team. They force 3 and out, get the ball back, but Penix and company still are not clicking. ASU pressure forcing another Husky punt. ASU drives down to the Husky 25, this time forces another field goal attempt.
Great.
This time Elijah Jackson is credited with a block, gets a hand on it. Husky defense stands tall. They're still not getting anything going, though. The Dogs and punt it back to ASU with just over 2 minutes left in the third. Sun Devils are moving the ball again, and they find themselves again with this awkward 4th and 3 from the Husky 30-yard line. They've missed two field goals in this game already. They decide to go for it. They don't get the 4th down. Huskies take over down 4 at the start of the 4th quarter now. Okay. Mm-hmm. Penix completes a 21-yard to Polk. Then Rome draws a crucial pass interference penalty. But Penix still just not in rhythm. And on 3rd and 10, BT, why, oh why, from the 27-yard line, does Grubb opt to run a reverse to Polk here? The Arizona defensive end plays it well, holds Polk to just 3 yards, and then the Huskies opt to settle for their second field goal attempt of the night. This one was no gimme. 47-yarder from Grady Gross, a career long, but he nails it. And yeah. Huskies cut the lead to 7-6 now with 12 minutes to go. Were you nervous?
Scholarship that man. Scholarship that man.
It's come. The scholarship's coming. Special teams player of the week, Grady Gross. All right. This defense had been on the field all night. They had been the victim of four turnovers and more punts than they probably can care to remember. And ASU is starting to grind its way down the field, up one here. But after a controversial no call on the contact in the end zone, they're letting them play, BT.
Yep.
They find themselves, and again, in an awkward fourth and three from the Husky 19 with 8 minutes to go. Look, I don't blame Kenny Dillingham. His team is 1-6. They're leading a game and about to pull off the upset of the year in college football. So go do some weird shit, sure. Right? So that's what they did. They opt to go for it again rather than pad their lead, but it backfires. Borgay is picked off by Mish Powell, and in the flat, he really only had one man to beat, and he beat him, taking it to the house. Gives the Huskies their first lead of the night. But the offense then coming out cold on a two-pointer and running again, BT, coming up short there. So the Huskies' lead is still just 12-7, but the defense was really fired up now. Gets ASU to go three and out deep in their own territory. The Huskies have to endure. Explain this to me, BT. They punt to Giles Jackson, who takes to the ASU 31. Somehow, we end up with a double personal foul that's 40 yards, pushing the ball all the way back to the Husky 30-yard line. I do not understand how they gave 40 yards on that penalty. But finally,
Make it 80. Just round up.
You know, it didn't matter. Penix goes 5-for-7. He finds his rhythm. He gets down the field. But the one of those incompletes was a crucial third down. And they were 3-for-11 on third down in this game. And they just could not convert in the big moments. And they have to settle for another Grady Gross field goal. But they stretch this lead to 15-7. That's what really mattered. It was finally giving Washington like a little bit of breathing room. And the defense stands tall, gets another fourth down to end it. Washington 15, ASU 7, and BT. We never have to play the Arizona State Sun Devils ever again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I mean, this has been, you know, I think that UCLA one is that gets under your skin, and ASU has always been that one for me that, you know, we forget that they beat us 15 times in a row. I've never understood. Like, I think they have winning records against four or maybe five Pac-12 teams, and how are we one of them? They've always been our kryptonite, and I'm glad we never have to play that team again.
So it was 15 years, but it was only 10 games.
10 in a row. That's right.
We can kind of ride out on a hideout, split the last six with them. Oh, although
that's as good as it's gonna get.
Just take it and go home, BT.
Do you remember it was like 4 or 5 years ago on the pod though that I was like, we have line of sight in winning to get it if we can win the next like three in a row, you know, we're gonna get we'll have the win record over ASU. And then of course we just dump two and then dump the one last year, but good god.
I flew down to Tempe for the game last year. Hope I want to be there to end the streak, just like I had gone to Eugene to end the streak down there, and it was like it just flipping continues. We could not get by those guys. Fortunately, we do it when it really matters. I think we can all agree this one really mattered. Last year mattered too, but this one really mattered. Huskies stay undefeated, and we never have to play in Tempe ever again.
Well, look, before I get into what went wrong, let's talk about this. Is that how many teams over the years, over all the coaches, there is no way we win that game. We fold. We fold. We would fold and walk away losers, and the team would not come back from that. How many teams in the country, the same thing would be. How you overcome that turnover deficit. How you overcome that no offensive touchdowns. How you overcome that lack of time of possession and still get a win. It says something about this team. It really does. But
yeah, no, I mean,
there's some concerns.
The key for sure was the fact that they get the big defensive turnover. Game, you're down 4-0 in the turnover battle. ASU's looking to go down the field and score a touchdown. I mean, a field goal is not good enough for them right here, right? So they got a little greedy, but you had somebody who stepped up and made a play. I mean, Mish Powell gets the game ball. He made the play.
Yeah, what an absolute stud. I mean, and saved us all up in the stands. I think, you know, this one was a tough one where, you know, brought my folks to the game, and, you know, I try to keep them away from as much of the like screaming aggro swearing, and had to move seats a few times. Everywhere was just nastiness. It was tough. And, you know, when we came into the game thinking, wow, you know, would you ever think we'd play against a 1-5 ASU team night game and have so few tickets available and everyone going. Huge tailgate. Yeah. Great crowd who really stuck around. But, you know, again, they got the win. Should we talk about what went wrong? Some things that concerned me a little bit.
Yeah, well, there are more than a couple.
Okay, here we go. So let's get into the worry word. The O-line, this really, I'm worried. Mateo Mele out for the year. Julius Boello sits out. And Huff and Grubb had some experimenting, it seemed like they wanted to do. They moved Parker Brailsford over to the right guard. They played true freshman Landon Hatchett at center. And they just couldn't contain ASU up the middle at all. Knifing through. Landon Hatchett graded out at 52 in PFF. Brother Guerin, how about a 17? Yeah. Can't even get into the movies with that PFF score. Elder Hatchett didn't play much better, man. He didn't play much. I don't know if he was benched or injured or what happened. This made Penix super uncomfortable all night. Clogged running lanes. Allowed for all these batted passes, right? I mean, you get your hands up there because you don't have a defenseman who's just owning you. One ending in what was a surefire touchdown to a wide open Rome. But, you know, again, they're just batting that down because they have pressure and they're in the right spot. On that play, we had max protect, man. Seven linemen. We're missing rushers who came in unblocked all night. This combo just simply did not work. It looks like maybe they're going to move Parker back to center. Hope that Boyle is back at right guard. I worry about how thin this group is. Even if you look at the depth chart for Stanford and look at that level of two deeps. And the second side of that two deeps is worrying on the offensive line.
Well, I mean, we talked about the beginning of the season, right? Your tackles were the strength of your line, and you were replacing everybody on the inside. And we were like, well, Mateo Mele is, you know, solid, and yet he turns out he's out for the year. I mean, Brailsford's been, you know, probably your best interior lineman, and he's been playing really well. But they had to. They were forced to move him around this game, and the Hatchett brothers were probably their worst game. So ASU took that weakness and said, how come nobody's tried to exploit this? We're going to do it.
And they did. Like, look, the book has been out there on Penix, which is, you know, pressure him deeply and move him off his spot. He's not really a scrambling QB, right? This isn't Johnny football. Mm-hmm. He's different. He doesn't have to be. No one else was able to do it. When we can push the ball down the field, we have that second threat with J-Mac. You got the fourth threat in Jeremy. And, you know, then it's kind of a moot point. But when you are missing that and you are struggling so much in the offensive line that you're pushing him off his spot. I don't know how healthy he is either. It showed its sort of ugly face. Now, and then you have some play calling where, like, seriously, we're going Philly special on a 2-point conversion?
To me, the 3rd and 10 reverse, that's when I turned to some guys who were sitting near me and I just said, I think something may still be wrong with Penix. I mean, he clearly didn't look himself all night, but you're right. There was a ton of pressure in his face. Why are they handing the ball off or running a reverse in that situation on 3rd and 10, a crucial 3rd and 10 where you're trying to get the lead? I didn't understand.
It's a tough one. And look, sloppy play all around, right? ASU generated one turnover all year. They get four against us in one game. And I'll include some unnecessary penalties, including that, you know, 15 tack on 15 tack on 15, 40 yards that some of that's just is totally unnecessary, right?
I tried to do the math with the 15 and 15 to get to 40 BT, and I couldn't do it. So I don't know.
No, it's just like they just kept walking and walking and walking, and they're like, 45 seems like too much. Let's go back 40. The like run defense, 11 missed tackles. And look, the interesting thing is, like, we keep it in front of us. It's really interesting of this team. No, we have not allowed a single run over 20 yards all season, but they seem to be able to get four at will. Right?
No, the tackling was tough, and there was that tight end. I can't remember his name. But they split him out wide, and he would just take on the corners. I mean, he was a bruiser. And not only that, but, I mean, you had guys wrapped up in the backfield, couldn't finish the job. There were a few really huge tackles in huge spots. But by and large, there were a lot of missed tackles in this game. And that's something we didn't talk, you know, about until now. But, I mean, it was very frustrating.
Well, they were running that. It was almost like a bubble screen, but it was just a pitch out where they'd have three spit out left, and we just couldn't stop it. Let's talk about injuries in the secondary, man. It looked like Asa added a shoulder injury to his hand injury. The Cam Fab injury did not look good. And you've got Vince Nunley out for non-football reasons.
Yeah. No, the depth is safe. No, it's getting real thin. I mean, you got to hope that Asa can come back at the very least. I mean, Mish Powell, you're not moving off a Husky. Just had coming off his best game. But I was actually going to say, we get to the pluses from the game. This secondary, I mean, assuming those guys can come back at some point, the secondary has been the best in the Pac-12 so far.
100%.
Most passes defended the 42. Tied for most interceptions with 9. Yards per attempt, 6.0. That's best in the conference and 16th nationally. Even though teams do throw it a lot, 250 yards per game, the Huskies are actually keeping it 23rd nationally in scoring defense at just under 19 points a game. I mean, Pete Kwiatkowski himself would be nodding in approval, BT. Sure. So I think this defense has turned things around. It's just a question of who's going to be out there next week, and more importantly, in 2 weeks.
That look, I don't have pass protection and or pass defense on my list of concerns, but the injuries do. Like, the injuries do concern me. I guess the last thing I'll say is, and this is me with my purple and gold colored glasses, but I had a little bit of like, we have just a completely perfect culture right now with Kalen DeBoer, meaning all those things of the look ahead, let down, hangover from the big win. We are beyond that because us against us, this Kalen DeBoer culture that he's created is infallible, right? And that doesn't mean we're going to win every game. We're going to get outclassed. We're going to get out executed, but we have an infallible culture. And what I found with this game was they are still 18 to 22-year-old kids who weren't up for this game like they should have been. They would probably admit that as well. And still the culture of this team found a way to get a win and not throw the towel in. But it isn't like, I think I came into this thinking like, oh, the whole country is saying it's going to be a big hangover game that they won't get up for it. And I'm no, you don't know us. You don't know this Kalen DeBoer culture. And I do believe that they're still 18 to 20 or 2-year-old kids, but luckily we're able to come back and pull it together.
Well, I mean, I don't know that anyone, I mean, Chris Peterson, could be a Hall of Fame college football coach, BT. And then he dropped an inexplicable game to ASU and games here and there, particularly on the road. Right. Yep. We haven't played super poorly like that at home, really. But DeBoer's never lost a game at Husky Stadium. So I'm not ready to go that far and to say that I think we're in this vulnerable state or anything like that. I think it's a natural, function of just not being able to get the same level of hype for a game against your biggest rival with a top 10 opponent. And it's just you're never going to be able to capture that. Even the fans who came out, it was not a bad crowd on Saturday night, but even they were a definite step down from the Oregon game. So I think it's understandable.
I think it's understandable as well. I think maybe I got a little too high on, we're above the 18 to 22-year-old mentality that is going to, is going to have a difficulty getting up for this game. Though again, I could go down a list of past Husky coaches who would have thrown in the towel and completely imploded in a situation like this, and he pulled it together, which that was great. But like I said,
in the Sark years, we got killed sometimes in games like this. It wasn't just close losses, right?
Yeah.
We would have these blowouts when we were favored to win by 2 touchdowns. So, I mean, yeah, I agree. I think, you're never going to totally eradicate the fickle emotions of college-age kids. And this team is a veteran team with a lot of seniors, guys who came back to finish the job they didn't get a chance to finish last year. So I do think that they're going to find a way to get these games won, get the job done. And I think they'll do it again this week, but it's going to also be a tough one going on the road to an empty stadium.
Oh, boy, here we go. Yep. So let's flush this one down the old toilet and get it. Yep. Again, proud of them for getting that win, for staying undefeated, doing what needed to be. And, a lot of afterwards, what was the talk on the way out of the game? How many spots do you think will drop? Ooh, I don't know. 1, 2, 3, 4. And I'm like, who cares? And then we didn't drop anything because Oklahoma State, barely won. And a bunch of other crazy things happened and no one was really watching. And so it just ended up being a little fortuitous in that sense. But hey, I bet you the team has flushed that down the toilet and they're looking at Stanford this week. And so should we. But before we get into the current game against Stanford, Professor, want to take us down into the great annals of Stanford Cardinal football history?
Yeah, let's go to the Wayback Machine one more time. We've been getting a lot of feedback on these segments, and some of these are really interesting and fun stories. We talked about that glorious Cal Bears history a few weeks ago. so intertwined with Stanford, it's hard to separate them kind of entirely. But Stanford does have a rich tradition in its own right. Some of the legends of football in the 20th century and the 19th century have roamed their sidelines. Walter Camp, Pop Warner, Bill Walsh, Jim Harbaugh, each arguably the best coach of his particular era, and several of them being really true innovators of the entire sport, right? Then there's a rich tradition of quarterbacks from Jim Plunkett, the school's lone Heisman Trophy winner, John Elway, Andrew Luck. So even though Cal football was the first true American football program on the West Coast, they didn't really play other college teams because there weren't any until Stanford came along in the early 1890s. The first official big game occurred on December 17th, 1892 at Hatfield's ground in San Francisco. Obviously, neither of the universities are actually located there, but the teams thought they had actually played a spring game that season, which is kind of weird, but it's not really recorded as an official big game. The game wasn't even called big game. This one, the first one, ended in a 10-10 tie. Rivalry was born. And interestingly, the game was set up. We talked about those kind of Ivy Leaguers who had made their way back to the West to kind of get football started on the West Coast. Former disgraced President Herbert Hoover, the Stanford football team manager, was one of the integral forces that got this first big game going in 1892. So there you go.
Okay.
True to form, though, Stanford didn't just go out and find some slapdick to be its coach, right, when they were taking up football.
Was that what the job said in the early Craigslist of the era?
Needed. One slapdick.
It's a freaking PG show, Law Duck. Okay, continue.
Sorry.
Let's get back on track.
So team captain John Whittemore writes a letter to Walter Camp. This is a guy who is widely considered the father of American football. And he agreed to coach the team in 1892 after Yale's regular season. He had been the head coach at Yale and had won 3 national titles in 5 seasons. But he agrees to go coach Stanford for a few years. Walter Camp is really deserving of his own segment on a future podcast. He had more to do with growing and formulating American football than arguably any person in the early 20th century, certainly in the 19th century. He's widely credited with formation line of scrimmage, snaps behind center, the safety, all of these things that distinguish American football from its rugby roots and helped to increase the popularity of the American game. He served on many of the rules commissions in the early days of American football and published the first All-American teams in addition to his annual football guides. BT, he was truly both the Bill Belichick and the Phil Steele.
And the Phil Steele, all in one.
Of the 19th century, yeah, exactly. So Camp served as a Stanford coach for 3 seasons in the 1890s, and in 1901, Stanford was invited to that first Rose Bowl game against Michigan at Tournament Park. Camp returned to the farm and coached the then Stanford Indians in the first ever granddaddy of them all.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the Indians. I forgot about that.
And Stanford drops football, though, as we mentioned in a prior episode, due to national concerns about player safety. So from 1906 to 1918, there was no Stanford football, and the big game was against Washington. It was between Washington from 1915 to 1917.
I've heard of those guys.
Yeah, but they were excited, I think, when Stanford reinstated football. But Stanford kind of was still struggling to catch up to the other teams that had a little bit more of a head start, teams that had been playing football throughout the World War I era. But then they strike gold again, hiring Pop Warner in 1924. So their first 5 seasons of PCC, pretty mediocre. But in Pop Warner's first season, Cal was coming off the 4 straight PCC titles. We were talking about that, the Wonder Teams in the 1920s. It was actually their tie with Stanford in the 1924 big game that ended Cal's drip on the conference, and Stanford goes to the Rose Bowl where they lost to Notre Dame. But then they finished runner-up to UW and Enoch Bagshaw in 1925. Stanford rebounds in 26 and wins the PCC and played Alabama to a tie in the 1927 Rose Bowl. I think I mentioned this on the prior episode. Both teams in that situation claimed the 1926 national title. They came back and won the Rose Bowl again the next season. So really a lot of Rose Bowl tradition early in this time on the heels of Cal's big success. Coach Claude Thornhill replaces Pop Warner in 1933, takes the Indians to 3 more consecutive Rose Bowls. They won the 22nd Rose Bowl against SMU, new ACC league mate.
Oh yeah, what's old is new, right?
What's old is new. But by the time Clark Shaughnessy led Stanford to an undefeated season in 1940, Stanford was appearing in the Rose Bowl for the 7th time out of just 27 Rose Bowls at that time, more than Cal, more than USC. And after their victory over Nebraska that season, Stanford claims its second and final national title in 1940, even though Minnesota was declared champions by the AP prior to the bowl games, right?
Okay.
So by the time David Shaw stepped down last year, Stanford had accumulated 8 PCC titles in the early days and a share of or the league title 7 other times in the Pac-8, 10, 12 era. They trail only USC, UCLA, and UW. They are just behind by 1 for the most conference titles on the West Coast. So definitely one of the premier programs if you look back over the arc of a whole century. So the big game, right, that was the premier showdown on the West Coast in those early days. Some of those games, like that spring game I mentioned, are not officially counted by the records. But if you count everything, 125 games unofficially played between these two schools, the battle for the axe is the 13th longest running rivalry game in the nation and the 5th longest in the Power 5. A lot of Ivy League matchups in there, but they are up there with the longest running rivalry. The 1924 contest that we remember, as I mentioned, determined the Rose Bowl representative, and obviously the play in the 85th big game, the laterals of the band on the field in 1982, one of the most iconic plays in college football history.
Oh, yeah.
So big game has been a juggernaut over the years. There's a rich history there, right? But, BT, want to turn a little bit to Washington and Stanford's rivalry. Nothing to sneeze at here. These two teams
have
season since 2005. Saturday's matchup will be the 94th game between these two teams. But it's hard to imagine that we're going to keep playing this and going in the future. So let's look at this one as the championship. UW with 45 wins, Stanford with 44, with 4 ties. Stanford is looking to tie up the all-time series on Saturday. Things didn't start out well for the Huskies in this series. They won just 11 of the first 35 meetings, going all the way to World War II, basically. But then beginning in 1959, Washington rips off 8 in a row. Stanford answers by winning 10 in a row from 1967 to 1976. It was back and forth. And then beginning in the Don James era, BT, Washington won 20 out of 22 meetings between these teams from 1977 to 2003. This is the Stanford you and I grew up with, right? Only rarely lost, only twice in 26 seasons. This also overlapped with a huge, long 19-game winning streak against Cal. There's a huge run against Oregon State that we haven't gotten to yet, a good chunk of their run against Oregon and Wazoo. So what the point I'm making here is those Pac-12 North opponents, for those three, decades or so, the Huskies were really beating up on all those opponents. But since 2004, Stanford 12-6 against Washington, although the Huskies have rallied to win 5 of the last 8. One more historical nugget I want to mention. Remember we discussed a breakup at the PCC in 1959, right?
Yep.
At that time, Stanford, Cal, USC, UCLA, and UW were forming a new charter that eventually created the Pac-8. Yep. Washington State and the Oregon schools were eventually invited to join again after a relatively brief hiatus. But before that happened, University of Pittsburgh athletic director came up with quite a harebrained idea at the time to form the Airplane Conference with those 5 West Coast schools from the AAWU, plus Pitt, Notre Dame, Penn State, Syracuse, and then Army, Navy, and the Air Force Academies. This would have been the first national conference in 1959. And this would have been, just totally, like, up until that time, teams were taking the train. Stanford would take a 24-hour train ride to Seattle to play the Huskies, right? They'd start on Wednesday for a Saturday game. So eventually the AAU, the Pentagon of all things, BT, they nixed the idea and say, no, we're not letting the Syracuse Academies do this. So the AAW mends fences with the Oregon schools and Wazoo, gets the old band back together, creates the Pac-8. But, BT, alternate universe. Stanford and Cal headed to the ACC after all of this with Pitt and Syracuse. The Airplane Conference never left the ground for takeoff, BT, but it will hit a new altitude.
Oh, it's going to hit
again in the ACC.
Oh, just amazing. Wow. Not enough people. I was trying to think the last time I met someone named Enoch.
Yeah, I know a couple Enochs, actually.
You know a couple Enochs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Not, I'd like to meet a few more in my day, a few more Enochs.
They're all a little grumpy in my,
A lot of great history. And boy, you know, I guess as a Stanford fan, you knew Pop Warner was going to be a great coach because, I mean, shoot, you know, he's got the same name as all of those junior football leagues.
Right? Well, so that is I left that part out, BT, but he is the kind of famous for starting the junior football league.
Oh.
Pop Warner fields all over the country, right?
It was named after him. Oh, that's good clarity.
He was the first one to run a bootleg and kind of an innovator with play calling and whatnot in football. So really an influential figure in American football.
I love it. You know, you wouldn't know all this history if you were there for an average tailgate and game. You know, I think with Stanford, it's been tough for them to keep the local fan base as interested as what they do is. Like, you wouldn't know. They do have this rich history and recent under like the Luck McCaffrey era, which was an incredibly dominant set of teams.
No, and there are 7 Rose Bowls prior to World War II. Right. I mean, they had a kind of a great run there. It was pretty quiet for a long time. But David Shaw, Harbaugh years, they did make a few Rose Bowls in that intermediate time period. But the David Shaw, Harbaugh years are probably the best run in school history. And I mean, to think it was just a few years ago that this was one of the powerhouses in the country.
You know, and if my studies are correct, Stanford can get a series tie.
Yep.
With the win. We can put it out of reach, you know.
Yeah, and I don't think it's crazy. We might see like a Stanford or an ASU someday in a bowl game in a generation, you know, you see them in a football playoff or something, some kind of system postseason setup. So it's not crazy, but I think we want to protect the series history and clinch it on with a win on Saturday for sure.
Well, let's talk about this after that rich history. So this Saturday, 4 p.m. on Fox Sports 1, UW a 26.5-point favorite. That was a little surprising to me.
Ooh.
Yeah. And, you know, we'll get into that, but here's what I want to see. Boy, so this Stanford offense against our Husky D, what are we going to see? This is really interesting. Are we going to see the Stanford O that ripped off 46 points in the second half in the OT at CU and one of the coolest comeback wins I've seen? Or is this going to be the Stanford O that could only muster 7 up at home against UCLA last week? Quarterback Ashton Daniels, huge in that CU game, 400 yards, 4 TDs. They get leading rusher Casey Filkins back. He missed the UCLA game. This year's Stanford team had to replace the entire offensive line. When did this happen in the Shaw-Arbaugh era? To transfer that they all left. 5 starters with 142 starts, all gone. And you have a new system with Troy Taylor, more hurry-up offense, no huddle. Change from the old pro style that they used to run under Shaw. This is a Stanford team that has lost, as we talked about, 18 of their last 20 conference games. They've lost 10 straight against ranked opponents and 6 straight on the farm, including a loss against Sacramento State. This is not the McCaffrey Luck era Cardinals, but hey, what are we going to see? Out of the Husky D, is this going to be the game that we see a pass rush against this inexperienced offensive line by anyone not named Braylon Trice? Some others, right? Will this patchwork secondary with injuries, maybe starting a safety that we have not seen before, hold up against Stanford's new weapon, 6'2", Elik Ayabar, who has gone nuts the last 2 weeks, picked him up in Pac-12 fantasy, 384 yards and 3 TDs in the last 2 games. And with Filkins returning, and you have that 1-2 punch with him and Emmett's kid, EJ Smith out there, can we stop them? Or are they going to be able to get those easy four? Well, the hurry up, I think with our lack of depth, gas us. That's what I want to see out of the old Husky defense against Sisso.
Yeah, I mean, I think this Stanford defense, 6.5 yards per play, that's a bottom of the Pac-12. 8.3 yards per attempt passing defense, worst in the Pac-12. 54% on third down, worst in the Pac-12. And 75% touchdowns in the red zone on defense, tied for worst in the Pac-12. Most number of plays of 10 yards or more given up this season in the Pac-12. Oof. So by all those measures, Stanford defense is literally the worst defense in this conference. And, you know, you looked at that, you talked about that CU game where they put up, 46 points. The UCLA game the next week, they scored just 7. Oregon, they only put up six. So, I mean, you look at the scores, 56-10 they lost to USC. You look at the scores around the rest of their schedule, and you start to see, you know, that Colorado game seeming like kind of the outlier here.
Mm-hmm. That could be. Yeah. 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 I think you're right. How are you feeling, though, about, like, what specifically do you need to see from this offense? We talked about some of the things that ailed us against ASU. What do you think needs to happen this week? Or even, you know, not even talk about just getting one. What do you want to see?
Well, I mean, I think they got to protect up front, right? I want to see them with a combination, whether that's Brailsford and Bulow and Kaleppo up front. That combo hasn't been in the game together for a few weeks now. And so I think we want to see them step on this field and perform, right? And and just give Penix the time that he needs, you know, to make plays down the field, which is what he's been doing all season. I mean, we had, you know, one of the best sack rates in the nation going into that Oregon game, and that was on the heels of having one of the best sack rates in the nation last year and 2 years ago in 2020, or 2 years before that, I should say, 2020, yep, having the best sack rate in the nation in 2020. So, you know, you've had a prolific offensive line that's been able to protect Penix very, very well. And to see it all crumble against ASU like that, I think was a real shot across the bow.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree. Let's see a little more. So, hey, I think we can get into this one, though. Let's just go ahead and make some picks right now.
Okay.
26.5 points.
Yikes. I mean, so flashback to last week, we didn't make the picks on the show, but right after the show, Mitch and I did both take ASU at the 27. I'm going to do it again. I think, you know, these huge lines, especially on the road at a place where UW's really had a lot of trouble over the years, I don't see them covering the 26.5. But I do think they will win this game and find a way and be 8-0 going into the big showdown in LA.
Oof. Boy, and we just a little tip of the cap to that. We've got a big show coming in next week in SC Prep. And then the whole Dogpod crew is going down to the state of California. I think there's 115 of us total that will be down there for this game. Tailgating at the Psycho Gate.
And you've been circulating. You've been setting tickets around to the other podcasts, BT. We got other podcasts coming down.
Other pods are coming in, man. We had some extra ones, and now we're bringing those guys in too. I mean, this is, this there can truly be peace among podcasters. But hey, before that, we got to come into there. Hey, know what this big win. So look, I think they get the win. 26 is a little rich for my blood. You know, if this was maybe, I would have needed 18 to entice me on this. 22, 23, I still think. I don't like it. I just want to win. Get out of there with a win.
I do think this UW defense is going to bottle up Stanford on offense, assuming we've got some bodies back there at safety. I mean, we just don't know what that's going to look like at safety. But like we mentioned earlier, right, this secondary, UW secondary, is turning out to be the best, if one of the best at least, but maybe even the best in the Pac-12. I think that's where Stanford really was able to torch Colorado is through the air. I think UW, this is a bet. Honestly, the ASU matchup was a little bit tougher. Even though these teams are both, you know, one win caliber teams, this Stanford matchup is kind of a lot juicier. So if there was going to be a game of the two that they would cover a 4-touchdown spread, I'd take this one. I don't think it'll be as close to that ASU game.
All right. So both your hosts today are talking UW win, but probably not a cover. We both, I think, hope we're wrong and we get out of there with some 35, 40 point win and feel a lot better about things and get those back to the old days, the first 4 or 5 weeks where we get the, the second, third stringers in a little bit earlier. How about some Pac-12 roundup from last week? Okay. I'm going to go through them and then you talk to me about where we are from our picks. Number 9, Oregon, 38-24 at home with a win against Wazoo, win but no cover. Cougs lose 3 straight, but Cam Ward looked like he's back, man. 438 yards, but getting beat down, he took 6 sacks. The big one was number 14, Utah, with the upset win over number 15, USC, 34-32 with a last second field goal for the win in the Coliseum. Ending, I think we can all say, USC's national title hopes and ending probably the Heisman campaign for good, but USC and Utah are definitely 100% in the mix for the Pac-12 championship. Late game was a snoozer. Ethan Garber's back in action for a big 42-7 win. UCLA over Stanford, they would win and they would cover. How'd we do, prognosticators? What are we looking like?
Well, BT, I'm gonna spare the listeners the pain and suffering. You had a clean sweep in this one. we
not
all
the
took
kind
Stanford.
Of sweep you want.
No, not the kind of sweep you want. We all took Oregon. We all took Stanford. Mitch and I did get the Devils and Utah to cover. So we're gaining a little ground on you. And now I am just two games back. Mitch is three. So we're coming into the stretch run, and it's definitely anybody's game.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. So let's get into it. Let's no more farting around then. Last week, I think I was having a little bit of fun and wanted to make things interesting and let you guys in. No more. It's not happening.
And
again.
We've already got Mitch's pitch because we can announce them, I think, as we go.
Okay. Here we go. So let's start. We've already made our UW Stanford pick, and I think it's one, and it's no separation is going to happen there. Big one of the day. Here you go. It's number 8, Oregon at number 13, Utah, both 5-1, 12:30 on Fox. Game day is in Salt Lake City with the old Pig Bus boys and the crew. Shout out to Welby and the rest of that Pig Bus posse. I hope I see you on TV. It's Oregon, the 6.5-point favorite.
Yeah, Mitch has got the Ducks here. I'm taking the other side of this one. I'm just Utah just looking a lot better as the season's wearing on, for one thing, but also having this one at home and getting 6.5. So I'm going to keep riding them. I got them over the Trojans last week. I'm going to take them over the Ducks this week.
I like that one as well. I really like what I see out of Utah. And I think, look, if this was a pick, I don't know. But I'll take those points, man. Give me that. Let's go Utah. Here we go. Looking for a bounce back. It's number 24, 6-2 USC at 3-4 Cal, 1 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. Trojans, the 11-point favorite.
Yeah, and I finally won a Trojans bet, BT, and it was easy. I just had to stop picking them. So I'm going to ride it again with Cal. I'm taking Cal in the 11 at home. They've played SC pretty tough in recent years. Justin Wilcox's defense, I'm going to, even though I'm not super confident Cal's going to be able to outscore them, I like those 11 points. Mitch is taking the Men of Troy.
Mitch is taking the Men of Troy. Wow, okay. All right. This one's a little interesting for me. I think that, the one thing I like about Cal, they've had an extra week to prepare for this. And we saw what ASU was able to do with that and keep that thing close with USC. But, this is a tough one. I'm going to go with Cal on this one as well. I think it's a close game. I think Cal win. I think this is a Trojan win by like 9 or something like that. 4-3 CU is back in action after a week off in Pasadena. Again, they had the two weeks to prepare. UCLA, their opponent, number 23, did not. 4:30 on ABC. UCLA, a 17-point favorite.
Yeah, Colorado on the bye week, and Dion uncharacteristically kind of laying low, right? No press conference all of last week, laying pretty low after that Stanford debacle. Who knows? Maybe they were looking ahead. I'm going to come back to the Buffs here. And even though this one's at UCLA, I don't know that UCLA is going to be prepared to go into a shootout with Colorado. So I'm going to take the Buffs. Mitch is also on the Buffs.
Yeah, this one is hard. This is all about your belief of like, what is that UCLA defense and what they were able to do against Stanford? Can they repeat that? And then, with CU having the 2 weeks to prepare, what kind of crazy things can they come up with here? This one is tough. I'm just going to keep going. I like these 2 week breaks. Give me CU to cover those 17. Sorry, we can't get any separation there. How about the next one? 4-3 Wazoo gets their hands on 1-6 ASU, 5 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. Wazoo, the 6-point favorite on the road in Tempe.
Yeah, yikes. They really are tempting me into taking the Devils here. And I don't want to overreact to what I saw. I did think ASU, I do think they're playing better. They're getting closer to a win. I think they're eventually going to crack it. Here, though, I'm liking that I'm getting 6 points. So I am going to take the Devils. I'm going to hold my nose and take the Devils. Mitch is on the Cougs, though, BT. So here you go. Chance to make up some ground.
Yeah. Mitch is on the Cougs. Huh? All right. So he thinks this is some big win and that Wazoo can do something that we can't. Not happening here. Yeah, I think this is tough. Wazoo losing their last three, even though they looked decent last week. ASU's got to win somewhere. They got to win.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's going to be this week, but I think they hold this one tight. Give me the Sun Devils. I already feel bad about that pick. I already hate that pick already. Yep. I made it 2 seconds ago.
I hate it too.
All right, here we go. This is an interesting one. Number 11, Oregon State, the Beavers, 6-1, traveling down to Tucson to take on Arizona. 4-3 Arizona. Oof. Vegas likes this thing close. 7:30 on ESPN, they like the Beavers, but just by a field goal. Beavers by 3.
Yeah, I saw 3.5. Mitch and I were both lining up behind Oregon State in this one. I think this is a tough call. I would not have any issue with anybody taking Arizona at home and getting 3.5. They're another team that's been kind of breaking through a little bit. And I think Oregon State, I still think they've got another loss in them. I don't think they're going to be, vying for the title at the end of the season. But I think they'll squeak by in this one, so I'm going to take the Beavers.
Okay. And is Mitch with you on that train?
Yep, he's got the Beavers too.
Mitch has got the Beavers. Yikes. Okay, this one's a little tough. As much as I want to be a contrarian here, I don't think this is the one. 3 is just not enough. I was really hoping for like Beavs by 7, 8, etc., but Beavs by 3. Yikes. Yeah. Yeah. This one is real hard. You can't entice me with 3. I'm going to take the Beavs to win this one. So there we go. That's our time. Let's see what happens next week if we get some separation. But this is a big week. We're going to be glued into our TV. There's a couple of the fans are going to be down there. Shout out to Dantos and Comart, Dog Pod listeners, Dog Pod fans who will be down there at the farm cheering on our Huskies. Hopefully, probably being told to sit down because the local Stanford fans are enjoying the match and would like to stay seated. I hope that the dogs can really get down there and just like put this crap. They're playing on the grass. We're playing, etc. Go down there and put this – hey, the series – no series tie. Series win. Series win for us as we leave the Pac-12. Go down to USC and into the real murderer's row of our schedule. The last final four games with an 8-0 record. Man, Husky Nation, that would be great.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything if you just don't pull this out. And I mean, and we were looking around each other at the second half of that ASU game last week and thinking, we just piss it all down the tube if we lose this one after what we did a week ago against Oregon, right? So you're 7-0, protect that record, just get the win. You don't need any style points. Let's get that win and head down to LA.
Let's see who's healthy. Maybe we see Jalen McMillan, and get to back to kind of that offense that we saw against Michigan State and others. When you've got all those weapons on the field where they can create some separation, 18-21, put the other teams on their backs and then finish it off. What a great season it's been, the last one of the Pac-12. We'll be back next week to talk about it in our Super Show before we head down to USC. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Washington State University.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Oregon and Stanford.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.